You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This next piece does speak on family violence, so if you are sensitive to that subject, I do recommend you tune in after the next 8 minutes. Tune back in, that is. Last week, the government announced that its family and sexual violence prevention strategy would be getting a $115 million boost as part of this year's budget. I spoke to Carrie Leonetti from the Faculty of Law at the University of Auckland on the matter. I started off by asking about her thoughts on the government's strategy to prevent family violence.
So I think it's important to distinguish between the broad strategy. There's like a broad strategy document that lays out a lot of the social science around sort of cultural sensitivity and family violence. And I actually really liked that part of the document. I thought it showed a very sophisticated and nuanced understanding of family violence. Where my concerns kick in is the second document, which is what's called the action plan, which lays out 40 specific action steps to do something about the problem identified in the broader strategy document. And the specific concern that I have about the action plan is how few of the action steps are focused at all on the family court. I mean, by my count, from what I can tell, of the 40 action steps to implement this new domestic violence strategy, this new family violence strategy, only two of them seem to involve the judiciary, the family court. And from what I can tell, they just involve training and practice guidelines. And the concern that I have about that, first of all, is that our family court is often the primary systemic response we have, the first systemic response we have to victims of family violence when they decide to try to leave a violent family or a violent relationship. I mean, we know that only about 10 to 20% of victims of family violence ever contact police. Even fewer victims of family violence contact child protective service agencies like Oranga Tamariki. A lot of women who've experienced violence are afraid that if they reach out to police or to child protective services, that they'll take their kids away from them or arrest them for failing to protect them from violence. So for a lot of victims of family violence, the family court is the first stop where they go. And they typically go either seeking a protection order or they go seeking some kind of interim care and contact arrangements for their kids to protect them from a violent other parent. And so what concerns me is that we only have two of the 40 action steps geared at the family court. And even then, it's not entirely clear who it's geared at. They use language something like court-related workforce. So I'm not even entirely sure what they're talking about because they're not as specific as like judges, psychologists, lawyers for the child. But a very small percentage of these steps appear to be aimed at the family court. And the steps that are aimed at the family court, I am concerned, are terribly inadequate for the scope of the problem we have in terms of our family court's historical response to victims of family violence. The family court for decades has been the subject of some pretty scathing reviews and reports and inquiries into its handling of victims of domestic violence. We have had previous rounds of family violence strategies. We've had previous rounds of training for our family court workforce. And it's never moved the needle on the systemic failure of the court to respond appropriately to victims of family violence. And at the end of the day, if our family court isn't a safe place, in particular for women and children who've experienced violence, then all the rest of these systemic responses, I think, aren't at the end of the day going to work. One of the most common reasons that women report for not leaving violent relationships is they're afraid that their violent partners will end up with custody of their children. It is a common tactic of domestic violence perpetrators to threaten women that if they leave, they'll never see the kids again. And so if our family court isn't a safe and appropriate place for victims of family violence to go for protection, they basically can't leave. And that to me is sort of the biggest concern that I have with the adequacy of these action steps to address the scope of our problem.
With $115 million going into family and sexual violence prevention already, that being announced in the pre-release of the budget, the next thing I was going to ask you, is there anything which may have gone unaddressed? And I guess you've sort of just answered that. So on that note, do you think there needs to be a lot more insight into the systemic issues we see within the family court?
Yeah, I mean, so I look at the action plan sort of with regard to what the alternatives would have been. So I think the first thing it's important to understand is that for several years now, there have been recommendations that we actually abolish our current family court and build a new institution staffed with people with specialized expertise in family violence, like a specialized domestic violence court. So in 2014, the Glenn Inquiry recommended that. In 2015, then Justice Minister Amy Adams recommended that. In 2015, the New Zealand Psychological Society also recommended that. In fact, they have a really depressing 2015 submission to Parliament where they basically say, this is when Parliament is amending what was the Domestic Violence Act and is now the Family Violence Act. And they basically say in their submissions to Parliament, it doesn't matter what you do to the law. The court that you have implementing it is incompetent to implement it. And so you can put anything you want in the Domestic Violence Act. It doesn't matter. And so they called for establishing a specialized domestic violence court. Last year in 2021, in the wake of this sort of huge scandal around the Mrs. P case, a group of about 70 domestic violence advocates and scholars and human rights lawyers sent an open letter to Jacinda Ardern, again reiterating that we need to build a specialized court staffed with personnel who already have expertise in family violence. And even just in terms of things like the budget or accountability measures, I think one of the frustrations I have even with these action plans, because there's an alternative, right? I mean, I feel like one possibility is you build a court and you staff it with people who already have expertise in family violence. And I think that's definitely the first choice. But if your alternative is to try to take your existing workforce that lacks specialized expertise in family violence and upskill them, then I guess the question I have with the strategy is, how are you going to define your performance in that? How are you, what are the outcome measures that you're going to have? Because we've had previous rounds of domestic violence strategies that have called for training the judges and lawyers in the family court, and they have been trained. We have been training judges and lawyers in the family court for years on family violence, and it hasn't affected outcomes in the court. And so that's kind of one of the frustrations I have is there's no, as far as I can tell, there's no performance measure. There's no outcome measure built into why, to even just measure if this time the training is going to be better or this time the practice guidelines are going to be better. In 2007, there was a huge report into, kind of one of these many, many scathing reports into the family court's handling of victims of domestic violence. And the Ministry of Women's Affairs recommended that the Ministry of Justice actually require the professionals in the family court, like the judges and the lawyers for the child, and the specialist report writers, to demonstrate a multidisciplinary understanding of domestic violence. So not just to go to training or be given evidence-based practice guidelines, but to basically have to sit proficiency exams before, before they're appointed, before they're allowed to work in the court. And I mean, I guess maybe I look at this as a lecturer. I think if I went to the University of Auckland and said, look, I'm going to keep lecturing my classes, but nobody is ever going to take quizzes, tests, or exams ever again or have to write a paper in my classes. I'm just going to put the information out there and like tick the box that I've done it. I'm pretty sure I'd be fired. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure, right? Because part of teaching people things is requiring them through assessments to demonstrate that they understand and can competently apply what you're trying to teach them. And so it seems to me it's just that. It's the absence of some kind of outcome measure, because just the training, just the sort of training and guidelines for the family court is more than $4 million of this strategy. So that's a lot of training and a lot of practice guidelines.
Would you say that a real focus here should be made on building that new court system as opposed to putting more money into the family court system we already have, which does have these systemic issues?
Yeah, I mean, if what you want to do is tweak the problem, if you just want to tweak the existing strategy, then you could at least build in some outcome measures, some performance measures. I mean, most of us, when we go to work, have to sort of show on a regular basis that we perform competently at our job, right? So at a minimum, you could say we're going to have twice a year or once a year, proficiency examinations for the psychologists and judges and lawyers, and they don't get to keep presiding over these cases or working on these cases if they're not proficient. You could do that, but even that, honestly, I think is inadequate to the scope of the problem. I mean, the United Nations Committee has made clear that they want us to have a Royal Commission of Inquiry into our family court's treatment of women and children who've experienced violence. They told us that in their concluding observations in 2018. They took the extraordinary step last year of sending a letter to the New Zealand ambassador telling her that New Zealand's response to their recommendations about the family court in 2018 was unsatisfactory, in their words, and reiterating their call that we have a Royal Commission of Inquiry into the family court's treatment of women and children who've experienced violence. And again, we've had a series of these sort of expert panels going back to 2007 saying, we just need to build a new court. You know, the idea that you're going to upskill people out of decades of non-evidence-based experience, I think is a massive uphill challenge. I guess that's what it comes down to me. I mean, I've spent my life training lawyers, and I think anybody who's ever done kind of hiring and training and supervision in any sort of type of job would tell you, you'd always rather have a blank slate than a person who's learned and been trained badly. There's nothing worse than someone who has a lot of experience doing something wrong. That becomes really difficult to kind of train and guideline and assess your way out of. And so that's the sort of question I have is, why are we investing $5 million, almost $5 million, into upskilling a workforce that is widely regarded as not being competent at the task of understanding family violence, listening to children, and protecting women and children from more violence? Why are we investing in trying one more time to train this court? Why don't we get serious about the conversation about building a court from scratch with people who already have expertise in this area? We have a lot of experts on family violence in New Zealand, and I suspect if we were serious about building an expert specialist court, I suspect a lot of those people would volunteer their time on that project. But I have a lot of colleagues who've gone in and done training on family violence to the family court, and they largely come out with these really concerning stories about feeling like the message isn't being absorbed and it's being resisted and there's a lot of pushback against it. And so that's my question is, okay, and it's, by the way, these are in like phase 3 and phase 5 of the plan. So when we get to phase 3 of the plan and we start doing the training, how will we know if people are learning what they're being told at the training and applying it when they go back to their jobs? Like where are the accountability measures for that?
That was Carrie Leonetti from the Faculty of Law at the University of Auckland, speaking about the government's strategy to prevent family violence.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.